Was the direct impetus more from the professional people or the lay people, would you say?
That's a good question, but I think the lay people in this instance played a very important role. The input that I'm not really familiar with is the national input. I'm sure that the Council of Jewish Federations, which had been in operation and existence for quite a few years already, was probably promoting merger all around the country. And after all, we in Pittsburgh were in contact with national people just the same as any other community. And there, it's quite possible that there was significant professional input. The thing I don't remember anymore, now that you ask the question that way, is what role Dr. Taylor, if any, played in trying to promote the merger before he became ill. My assumption is that it was already underway, but I could be wrong. By 1954 or 1955, Dr. Taylor really had a very small group of lay individuals to whom he was close. And to tell the truth, he was not in a position really to effectuate merger too well. He was certainly not on intimate terms, or certainly not highly regarded by what term shall I use? The Zionist oriented, let's use that term, the Zionist oriented group. He was close to people maybe like a Donald Stein first, maybe Stanley Kahn, I'm not so sure. But my guess is that it was not he who was primarily instrumental, although he was certainly involved in it, but it was the lay people who wanted it and who talked about it and who finally brought it about. Person like Bernard Kaplan, who, although he was not a major contributor, was very highly regarded, certainly had a lot to do with accomplishing it. The merger, by the way, did bring about, as I indicated last time, complications with community chests. Community chests seized upon the merger, in a sense, as a moment at which to declare its separation from the Monocure. And it was at this time that the Monocure, which had been a beneficiary through the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, a beneficiary of the Community Chest since the time of the organization of the Community Chest, was now ousted as a beneficiary. And there was an arrangement, finally, a relatively amicable arrangement worked out with the Community Chest by which the Monocure would cease being a beneficiary of the Community Chest and would become a beneficiary of the new United Jewish Federation. On top of that, there was a really relatively bitter discussion between the Community Chest on one hand and the new federation on the other, on the issue of the relationship between the Community Chest and the former Community Chest agencies. Prior to 1955, when the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies was in existence, the Community Chest would make its allocation to the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, which in turn then would make its allocations to the individual agencies that were part of the Federation. After the merger, at the insistence of the chest, the relationship really ran from the agencies to the Community Chest. And even today, the agencies, as you know, still appear before the budget committees of the chest of the United Way and still receive allocations directly from the United Way.
I'd just like you to clarify one thing. Are you saying that The community chest gave a block of money to the federation, which decided on its own who got how much money. I see.
And that now changed. Yes. After 1955 or 56, the community chest allocated directly to the agencies. The federation did receive recognition as a planning agency. On and off, this has been a sore point between the chest or the United Way and the federation. Although today, I have a feeling, right at this moment, I have a feeling that the relationship between the United Way and the federation is probably a good one. And certainly the kind of money that the federation seems to be receiving from the United Way is pretty substantial. But there were periods of strain between the chest and the federation having to do with allocation, particularly on occasions when the chest was not doing well, and there was a long stretch there when the chest was not raising money effectively. Anyway, Bob Hiller did come to Pittsburgh, did with the recognized leadership, I guess you have to use that term, put together a building and develop some new leadership and so forth. But let me go back to where I was for a little bit to point out that one of the relatively first, not relatively, one of the first acts of the new federation was to create this Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. There's been a lot of difference of opinion within federations around the country whether you should have two separate entities, one being planning and one being budgeting, or whether you should have a single entity which does both planning and budgeting. I had very strong feelings that it should be a single entity. Bob came from Cleveland, where even today they still have two entities, planning and budgeting. But in this instance, I prevailed. And we did have a single, and still do, of course, have a single social planning and budgeting committee, although I must say that each Cleveland representative, Bob Hiller, Jerry Schroeker, I don't know about Howard, have always leaned in the direction of having two entities. But up to this point, at least, as you know, there's the single social planning and budgeting. And you can have a long discussion, if you want, about the pros and cons. And there are pros and cons of both.
I think that would be valuable for you to share those
with
us. Well,
the pro is that the principal argument for a single entity is that you have the same people planning and spending, and the relationship, therefore, between planning and spending is very clear and so forth. The principal argument against it, and it's a strong and cogent argument, is that there is a tendency to focus only on immediate needs and immediate spending and not to do long-range planning. And I was always aware of that, that we didn't do much long-range planning, and whether we suffered from it or not is something that one has to make their own assessment about. When I say we didn't do long-range planning, we didn't have a separate body who looked at issues in a sense and attempted to separate them out from what might be called practical everyday concerns and so forth, but instead attempted to accumulate research, and on the basis of the research, we didn't do much of that, for better or for worse. On the other hand, we did do some long-range planning, and as a matter of fact, maybe I'll talk about that now, because it took place in 1960, and that isn't too long after Bob came. It isn't too long after we put together the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, and it highlights the relationship between the Federation on the one hand and Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged on the other. And I know that you, Sylvie, have a lot of interest in that and a lot of direct connection with what has happened over the years at the home. But I'll put on the record, first of all, the fact that even though the home was one of the original organizers of the Federation of Jewish Land Groups back in 1912, that starting at least in the 40s, and maybe even before that, the relationship between the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies on the one hand and the home on the other was a very unpleasant and a very difficult relationship. The relationship between Dr. Taylor as the executive of the Federation and the lay people at the home who ran the home, that relationship was indeed bitter, unfriendly, acutely antagonistic, and you can use any terminology you want to describe it.
Why do you suppose that was, Saul?
There were a couple of reasons I think that I could name. One was unquestionably a personality factor. Dr. Taylor is very much a social worker. He's also very strong in attempting to control and to impose his ideas. And he saw himself as the executive director of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies in a position of responsibility to the associated agencies, and having not only the responsibility, but presumably the power to bring about change in associated agencies. On the other hand, as is well known, the home from its very establishment was run lock, stock, and barrel by lay people. This is typical around the country. This is not something unique to Pittsburgh. Although Pittsburgh is one of the last, it's now changing, so I guess I can use the word, was one of the very last homes to give up lay control. But in the 40s, the lay control was very, very strong. The people, I guess I can name some of them, the people who ran the home, ran it as a purely personal preserve, if I may use that language, and looked upon the professionals as nothing more really than clerical and maintenance people. Sidney Stark Sr. Was one of those. Saul Perlman, you may or may not know, was another, and so forth. If you went back over the presidents, you would, particularly in the 40s and 50s, you would find people who, as I say, looked upon the home as being their private undertaking, and they would brook no intervention from social workers, particularly and certainly from Dr. Taylor. And I can remember two or three meetings where Dr. Taylor was present, and where Sidney Stark, for example, were present, where the hostility, as they say, was so thick you could cut it with a knife. I remember Dr. Taylor attempting to get some money from, I don't know whether it was the fund or the Federation any longer, probably the Federation maybe. Anyway, trying to get some money to support a school for social workers that had been organized at that time in New York. And Sidney Stark, very brutally, if I may use the word, who else going to be reading
it? Nobody but some unknown researcher
probably,
some years from now in Gilman Library.
Probably Bill Stark's.
No.
But
no.
Never mind. Anyway, Sidney Stark did uh, prevent the use of the money. I wouldn't mind the deletion of the word brutally there, though, because I'm not sure that's fair to Sidney, but he did come on very strong.
Well, he's a man of strong convictions. That's okay, too.
Yeah, all right. anyway, in the home, and as I say, in its relationship with the Federation, of course, was very bad. Nevertheless, the home, as part of the deal with the community chest, still had to come into the Federation and present its budget. As I said, after 1955, the money was allocated directly to the home by the community chest, but again, the home would make an appearance before the Federation Budget Committee. Now, the home, prior to 1960, had expanded on several occasions, so that by 1960 it already had 420 beds, the same size as it is now, in fact larger than it is now, and it was one of the very largest homes in the whole country, even though Pittsburgh was far from the largest Jewish community. In 1960, the home was seriously considering another building expansion. It came before the Federation Budget Committee and made its presentation. In the course of that presentation, it indicated its intention, or at least its desire, to expand. Barney Goodman was president of the home at the time, if my memory serves me right, and made the presentation. I don't, at this moment, remember, oddly enough, who was chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. But anyway, the Federation said to the home, before you undertake another expansion, which is contrary to current trends that are beginning to take place now in the whole field of services to the elderly, where deinstitutionalization and so forth, and I won't stress all the concepts that were already at work in care for the elderly, but the Federation said you may be expanding contrary to the modern concepts of care to the elderly, and you may be expanding for a population that doesn't need it. Wouldn't it be wise, perhaps, to do a study and see whether what you're planning makes sense? And I'm frank to say that the Federation was quite amazed to have the home say yes. Harry Kamen was already becoming a principal person, maybe already the principal person. I guess he was already the principal person at the home. And in some ways, he was more reasonable to deal with than some of the former advocates of the home. God knows he was just as much a promoter and an adherent of the home, but in some ways his outlook was different. It was agreed that a study should take place, sponsored by Federation, and Bernie Halpern, who was then chairman of what was called the Health and Institutional Services Committee, agreed to chair the study. Cecil Sheps, name mean anything to you?
Yes, he did the study.
Well, you will remember, you'll remember something of this, but I'll put down on the record.
No, I don't really know this background
at
all.
Well, Cecil Sheps had recently come to Pittsburgh to be at the Graduate School of Public Health, I guess it was. He was already, although he wasn't too old, already a national, maybe an international authority on this. Bernie, I think, and Ethel already knew him. I think that's how the suggestion came. Ethel, by the way, worked for him for a while on a paid basis. And it was suggested that he be asked either on a volunteer basis or on a limited fee basis. I think it was a volunteer basis to act as a consultant of the study. So I would guess Bernie, although I no longer remember, asked Cecil if he would be willing to do this, and he said yes. And we put together a study committee consisting of representatives of the Federation Health and Institutional Services Committee, people from the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged, and people from other institutions that had some responsibility to give services to the elderly and the chronically ill. And it was supposed to be a study of services to the elderly and the chronically ill. And as I said, it was chaired by Bernie. And the conclusions of the study were pretty well known before the study started. It was one of those studies, there have been a lot of them over the years, not in Pittsburgh alone, of course, where you do a study primarily to authenticate, so to speak, the conclusions that you know are almost inevitable. And that was one of these studies. Because on the table already around the country were concepts such as the term I used before, deinstitutionalization, housing for the elderly, and so forth. And so we did a good study, as a matter of fact. The group took trips. They went to Philadelphia, went to New York, I remember rightly. Yes, of course, went to New York, went to Cleveland, I think, and visited various facilities that were in operation. In New York, for example, we visited an apartment house for the elderly. In Philadelphia, we visited the Home for the Aged and the apartment house for the elderly. In Cleveland, we visited a very small housing for the elderly development, which had just gone into operation under the sponsorship of the Council for Jewish Women in Cleveland. We included in the study Vicar Holum, which at that time was running a small semi-home for the aged on either Negley Avenue or Vaughan Boulevard, I forget which now. Very, if I may say so, relatively primitive. And we also did something which I was always very pleased with. We picked out the names of about 50 people, I think it was 50 individuals, who in one way or another were receiving services, or who we had reason to believe needed services because we used them, among others, the files of Jewish Family and Children's Service, which was also participating in the service, in the study. And these 50 individuals were reviewed, interviewed and reviewed by a trio of specialists, a social worker, a psychiatrist, and if my memory serves me right, a nurse. The point of the review was, as I said before, to authenticate the kinds of needs that were present in the Jewish community, and particularly among the elderly, and the kind of response that would make sense to those needs. And they were good interviews. I think they were among the archives, or archival material, I think, that were probably been thrown out, always to my regret. And then we issued a report. This committee issued a report, which I don't mind saying I wrote, but which it was brief, we were smart. It was a two-page report, it's still floating around.
The whole study you compressed into two pages?
Yeah, I wrote it and Cecil accepted it. And I think when I say two pages, I think it was four pages, two sheets. It's still floating around, and we made reference to it for years, and it's still attached to the minutes. And it was a good study. It was a good study. Out of it came recommendations for housing for the elderly, for assimilation, or at least affiliation of Vicar Holum, and for a role for Vicar Holum, for certain additional programs of the Jewish Family and Children's Service, a recommendation that there be a medical coordinator brought in, which is how David Siegel came to Pittsburgh. Although the role of medical coordinator didn't work out. But you know David Siegel, who is head of the outpatient department at Montefiore Hospital?
Is that his role now? his role now is
head of the outpatient.
And he was brought here to be what?
One of the recommendations was that there be a medical coordinator. Everybody always winds up making recommendations for coordination and calling for someone to be a coordinator. And once upon a time, we had an educational coordinator attached to the staff of Federation. It's one of the standard recommendations. Sometimes it's useful, sometimes it isn't. Medical coordinator was really the icing on the cake, so to speak. It was going to be part-time. He was going to be employed by the hospital, I guess part-time as head, I think, of their outpatient clinic, even then on a part-time basis, and part-time as medical coordination. Medical coordination didn't work out, and
What was he to coordinate medically outside of the hospital?
The agencies who were giving services to the elderly and chronically ill. The most important, in some ways, recommendation had to do with housing for the elderly. And we put together then a small subcommittee, chaired, I think, by Saul. I think it was chaired by Saul Shapiro. I'm not sure of this any longer. To do a study on the advisability of housing for the elderly in the city, and I think the same committee had the responsibility of making some recommendations, not only as to its advisability, but the practicality and the instrumentality and so forth. And obviously the committee said yes, it was advisable. And then, and this was after a soul-searching business, recommended that it be undertaken by a new joint committee or board. And when I used to say joint, I mean joint in the sense that it would have representatives, I guess equal representatives from the Federation, or the way we phrase it, was from the community at large, but appointed by the Federation president, and a similar number of representatives from the home, appointed by the president of the home. And it was further agreed that a logical site could be the home for the aged. That's why I say this was very soul-searching and very difficult. The result was that an organization called, or a board, or an agency called Senior Citizens Housing came into being.
And this year was?
1960.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have about one more minute, Saul,
right.
And I don't want to get too involved in a whole other concept, because I think that's where we'll start next time.
Okay, well, I'll just make this my final comment on that then. And that is, and as in a sense a compromise candidate, Barney Goodman was named the first president. He was acceptable to Federation, and he was acceptable to home. The business of trying to find an acceptable president and get equal representation and so forth was extraordinarily difficult. And honorary members, but with full powers, were Herman Feinberg, who obviously was acceptable to both the home and the Federation, and somebody else whose name escapes me at the moment. But we were very, very careful to attempt to have equality between Federation on the one hand and the home on the other, because it was recognized right from the beginning that this was going to be a politically very, very difficult business in which there was going to be a constant struggle for what might be called power. And on that note, I'm prepared to finish, because the discussion of the struggle for power is very illuminating and lots of fun.
Well, I think we'll do that next time, because I hate to interrupt it in the middle.
No, that'll be fun.
Well, the whole thing is fun. I just cannot tell you.
Howard himself got involved in it not too many years ago. Same business. Your brother Howard.
Oh. I wondered if you were referring to Howard Mermelstein.
No, Howard Mermelstein got involved very much in it just 2 or 3 years ago.
Well,
the struggle has gone on for many, many years.
It's a wonderful continuum, this whole thing, and the fact that some of this material is lost except through you is just unbelievable.
But it is the business on the housing. I know I'm not being recorded anymore. That can be fun because and very, very illuminating.
Well, and I think that's where we're going to start next time. Then.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind talking about that for an hour, but I'll.
Saul, this is so wonderful. I just can't tell you. I mean,
you'll have a lot of fun because Sylvia had her own to do with the home.
My father was there for.
Oh, I thought we were through.
I thought we were too. Okay. I think that we will leave all of this until our next appointment, and
okay.
It's obvious that we're going to need more than just next time. So
but that's interesting, though. On the tape is the business about Howard, huh? Well, that's okay.
That's very nice. It shows the continuity and stability of our community, is what it really shows.